Accession number 28411, reel 6.
This is the third reel of a taped interview with Pell Williams in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 17th of the 8th, 2005, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Pell, you're obviously talking about the Japanese and the threat that they would pose to Australia.
Yes, you asked me what I thought about the fall of Singapore. I think the main theme, certainly in my mind, and there'll be others, all of them, the fact that the Japs would be landing in Australia. There's no doubt about that. We didn't know what the overall situation was.
Well, they certainly landed a few bombs in Australia.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't think we even knew about that. We can't remember, really.
They didn't hear about Darwin and Broome?
Not then. Certainly Broome. I didn't know about Broome till well afterwards. I heard about Darwin, I guess. But Darwin was... we were on the high seas then, weren't we? Darwin was February, I think. And Singapore fell in February. I know we were...
February 15th.
Yeah, 15th. We were... that was a month before we arrived here.
19th in Darwin. But that was only the first of many attacks in Darwin.
We wouldn't have known about that. We may have, but I can't remember.
Here you are in Sydney. You're passing through Sydney and you can actually hear them.
Yeah, well, that... Well, those... Japanese subs. Oh, very definitely. We were told we anchored there outside the heads. We would have got in there about an hour. Got there about perhaps an hour after. I don't know, but we got there and we were hanging around. And we heard all these explosions. And subsequently, we were told about the subs and they were destroyed and all that jazz. And we got in there about an hour afterwards.
What was the vibe like in Sydney at that time?
I couldn't get the... none of us, only about a handful of us coming back. I really can't remember. All I know is we wanted to get into camp and out through the hole in the wall and into a pub somewhere, you know, enjoy the sights of Sydney. I can't really answer that because I don't remember what the vibe was like. I suppose there were screaming headlines. There were ships everywhere as we came in through the middle harbour. There were ships everywhere, you know, power boats and whatever. I think probably still checking out. They've got all the Japs, I suppose. They're very busy going through Cockatoo Island, you know, through the middle head into Circular Quay. Well, there was plenty of action then. But when you ask what the bloke on the street was, I really don't know. It would have shaken them up, I think. Very much so.
Had you heard of things like the Brisbane Line and prepared to defend this southeast?
Not then. I've certainly heard of it, obviously, but not then. We wouldn't see in a newspaper until we got to Perth, I suppose. Oh, you weren't interested in that. All you want to actually hear, you know... couple of blokes got down, kissed the bloody joint, you know, and they got off free metal with it. A bit of a show off. Yeah. But no, not really. I don't know where we heard the Brisbane Line. Didn't take much notice of it. It was a radical politician from South Sydney, Eddie Ward. But no, I don't know. That probably may have all happened before we got, or came out before we got home. I don't really remember when that reaction from that.
You mentioned that you were in training in the tropics prior to going to New Guinea.
Yeah.
Did anyone say to you, look, we're doing this because the Japs are going to invade Australia?
Well, they don't tell you much. You know, you're just a body in a battalion, and a battalion's in a... They don't tell you just this and that, but we all guessed it. You wouldn't be jungle trained to go to the desert, you know. So we knew damn well we were going, but didn't have a clue. We didn't quite know what was going on. Singapore had fallen, I think, you know, there was fighting in some of the New Britain, and the Japs had come down pretty well right across Australia. And we knew we were going somewhere, but we didn't know where. And someone guessed that, and then... they don't say, righto, pack up your gear, we're going so-and-so. You just pack up your gear and be ready to debus or entrail or whatever it is at 1,100 hours or something like that.
How does the average soldier cope with that situation? I would have thought that that would be quite disconcerting.
No, no. And, what? Not knowing?
Having to do stuff for someone else that you don't know anything about.
Oh, no, not really. I mean,
you're not in the picture.
You're not in the picture, and you.
But you're part of it. You're
well, of course you are.
Colour in the picture.
I mean, in the desert, and say, right, are we going to have a go at that pillbox over there? Now you don't know what's happening 100 yards up there. It's sort of your mind's only about that big in the war, and you know we were. You're so accustomed by then of doing, which is the army's way of doing anything, is absolute blind obedience almost. You know, you don't, you're just told you're doing that and you accept it. We're probably all part of a bigger picture, but that's only the world you live in, is what your battalion, indeed your company half the time in the jungle, had to do. You know, one stage there, the battalion was cut off in Kokoda. We just said, right, we were told, we've got to get our way around, and off you go. You don't know, wouldn't have a clue what's happening up there or why it's happened. You sort of live in your own little world.
Yeah.
But so, no, if you pack up, you know bloody well you're going somewhere to get into a stash, but no, and see, that's part of the picture, you know. Bloody great heroes, I think, but you just did it. Had to.
All right, well, let's talk then about the trip to New Guinea.
Oh, that was pretty bland, really. We were on a Liberty ship, which was, you know what Liberty ships are, probably. And that was from Brisbane to Moresby. It wasn't very long. It was probably about 4 or 5 days, I've forgotten.
With your training, presumably you've been told about the hazards of fighting in tropical conditions.
Well, not at all, but we trained in it, because there were tropical conditions in Maroochydore, where we were camped. It didn't measure up to the conditions there in Stanley's, but it was tropical, thick. You had to hack your way through sometimes. But we were mainly, looking back, they mainly... made us very fit, because, you know, it doesn't take long to learn to get into a stash and where the bloody will shoot, etc., in the jungle. You're first up, best dressed. But the main thing is you have to be fit. And we landed at Moresby, which is I remember, red, dry hills and no sign of any jungle, but you go about 10 miles inland, or 20, whatever it was, and you're right in. A lot of sugar plantations there. We were camped in one. But the jungle was very thick, particularly in the mountains.
But you've got diseases to worry about too.
Well, you didn't know about them then. Or malaria maybe. But yes, there were dengue fever and...
Have you been given lectures about things like...
No. Well, you don't need many lectures really. See, no one was experienced from where we were, our brigade or battalion or division, no one had fought in the jungle, so there's nothing they could pass on. But you learned pretty quickly. It took us 6 days to get up there with full pack, and I had a Tommy gun by this time, and the bloody ammo was very, very heavy. It's a 0.5. It's a little stubby thing about that big, but very heavy round. It's 0.5. It's quite a big bore. At any rate, we had 3 tins of bully beef, I think, and a ground sheet, which is a thing you can wrap up that big, but it just goes round and allegedly keeps the water off you, and your tin hat, which is heavy. And most of us got hold of sticks to help us go up and down again. And, of course, The 14th were in front of us, and then ourselves, and 27th were kept in reserve or something. And by the time we got onto the track, there'd been, I think the 14th had about 600, and so did we. So they had 600 pairs of feet churning up the mud. It was pretty muddy by the time we bloody all got on the track. And it was a place of about, track was about 10 foot wide generally, it varied a bit. But on either side was very thick jungle. And you couldn't move at night, you'd get lost. You wouldn't get 10 metres in the jungle without being lost. Very dark, and it usually rained. Every day about 1 o'clock, you could hear the damn thing coming. Rained most of the time. I remember going to sleep one night beside the track, lying in mud, and it started to rain, and I just put the tin hat, which I use as a sort of a cushion, reverted, just put it over my face and just lay in the rain. That's all you could do. And you know, it was pretty hot. But there you go.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, heading up, taking off. And presumably you hadn't heard anything about what was going on further up the track.
We were going to go up there and the Kokoda airstrip was up there somewhere, where you could see the mountains, and we were just going to knock off the Japs and capture the airstrip. Simple as that, until we ran into the Japs.
Sounds straightforward.
Oh, well then, yeah, well, you don't know these things, really. We didn't know about Syria. We didn't know whether there was a million there or, you know, a couple of dozen.
People talk of the stairway up the hill. The first
the golden staircase, but it's that was one of many. I don't know who cut those stairs, but they were two bits of wood stuck in either side of the stakes, they were, cut from the jungle, put in either side of the track, and another strand across it. On the inside as you're going up, and another step, and they were the steps. Of course, they were absolutely caked in mud, with boots walking over them, and perpetually wet and slippery. You know, you could put your foot on there, you could go out that way, it would have been impossible to get up there without them. And they were, that particular one that you referred to it just went up and up. And you get to a ridge and think, oh, this is getting near the top, and you'd see just beyond it another bloody lot. It's just almost never ending. But I don't know, you were just there, and you just had to do it, and you never thought of anything else. I remember seeing a couple of birds when we were coming back, keeping the Japs at bay, lying somewhere or other, and I saw a couple of birds. I thought, you stupid bastards, why don't you get out of here while you're safe? Just one silly thing goes through your mind.
Well, I'm interested to talk to you about the initial part of your journey. Presumably you hadn't heard of the other battalion up the other end of Kokoda.
I know, the 39th, and another crowd too, the 53rd, 55th. Well, we knew there was some militia there. But apart from that, we didn't know the conditions or the numbers. Apparently there were about 10 to 1, the Japs. And I remember going up. There were some of the blokes in the 53rd, 55th Militia Battalion passed us coming down, a lot of them. And unfortunately, they were only kids and never trained, and they were shanghaied virtually from street up, straight up there, and they couldn't take it, and they left there. But the 39th stayed there in Fort Meade, they did a marvellous job. They filled up the Japs. Or didn't hold them. Yeah, well, they did, withdrawing. And the battalion didn't catch up until a village Kokoda track strip could be seen down the valley. We never actually got there. And that's where the battalion, or the 14th and the 16th, first encounter with the Japs. Now, I wasn't there then. I'd got a carbuncle on my wrist, and I joined the battalion at Brigade Hill, which was about two-thirds of the way up. And that was when Arnold Potts' brigade headquarters was cut off. The Japs had come in between brigade there and the battalion down the track, and things were pretty sticky there. Because if we had been cut off and surrounded, that would have been the end of everyone.
Well, let's talk about your experience in relation to the conditions, firstly, of that particular event that you mentioned.
You mean the conditions, physical conditions, or the tactical situation,
okay,
or what?
Well, you're stuck in the tropical jungle.
Yeah.
Presumably somewhere along the track.
Mm.
What were the conditions, physical and environmental, that you had to deal with?
Well, I've mentioned the track, you know, about 10 or 12 foot wide, varied. And when I rejoined the battalion, they were cut off. A place called Brigade Hill. They called it Butcher's Hill, actually. But known officially as Brigade Hill. Now, the Japs were down the valley coming up. During the night, they had surrounded, apparently they'd waylaid the Japs too long. And, of course, as soon as you waylaid them on the track, they had sufficient troops to come round. We were only on the track. And the tactics were, you'd leave half a dozen blokes, with the hills just behind you where you can escape quickly, and you'd wait, covered by a tree or something or other, and the Japs would come along the track with a poor, unfortunate bloke who was the forward scout, I suppose. He had to go up there in front of all the Japs behind him and draw the fire. Now, he's a dead duck. And this, what I'm describing now, happened time and time again. This poor unfortunate buggy, there the Japs are on him, urging him on, and we'd let him get, not too close, because he knew where the hell was behind him, but close enough. And, of course, he was there to draw the fire. Once they knew where we were, they knew we were there somewhere. Up they'd come, they'd swarm up, and be prepared to come around the side. So we'd knock this bloke, I would shoot him anyway, and we'd all scupper back over the hill, and in the next strategic place would be someone else, and we'd go through them, and they'd wait there, and this is how we delayed them. We had no chance of stopping them.
The tactical withdrawal.
That's right, but a very minor one on the track. But if you held them up on the track, they'd go around you. And we just didn't have the numbers to be able to counter that at all. And that's what happened at Brigade Hill. It was a bit more than just knocking that bloke off. That, you know, wherever they, if there was a good spot, there'd be a company or whatever left was a platoon or something, and have a real go at the Japs. But they knew they could only do it for a certain time, because they had by far too many blokes for us. Now, in Brigade Hill, I got there to Brigade Headquarters, where Potsy was, and we were told that the whole of our battalion, I don't know where the 14th was, I can't remember, were cut off. And they were told that they just had to go through the jungle. They couldn't come up the track because the Japs were there. Head down, arse up, and just break through the Japs. Of course, that's why it's called Butcher's Hill. We lost a lot of blokes there. Now, in the meantime, there was a company of 16th in reserve at Brigade Hill. There was always someone in reserve. And I got there just in time, myself and about half a dozen others. coming back from RAP or whatever, to join this mob. And we were to go down, back down the track to occupy the Japs on the track, coming up the track, and perhaps divert these Japs on either side and let our blokes pad down us up through. Well, we lost a lot of blokes going down there. I don't know how, but I got out without a bloody knock. I had plenty of bloody lead flying around, but just one of those things. Anyway, these blokes got through, but oh, they lost a lot of blokes. Anyway, the brigade was together again and went on with our tactics of... I remember I was a sergeant, and a day or two after that, I had to get four blokes, three of myself, to wait for this Billy Goat Jap coming up to draw the fire. And we could see, I suppose, from here to the gate, I suppose, that sort of distance, which is what, 50 yards, say. And we were waiting there. One chap by the name of Sugar Cale had a Bren gun, which is pretty heavy to carry, but he was there behind a tree. I had a Tommy gun, the other blokes had 303s, I suppose. Anyway, Sugar Cale, as indeed everyone did, he got taken short. And he couldn't, you know, disappear in the bush and have a crap. So, sitting there waiting, didn't know when this bugger was coming, but he was coming. So he just sat there and crapped himself and on to the next job. But, you know, we all had diarrhea or beriberi, none of them thing. Anyway, that was just one little occasion.
Did you ever think, right, we've got this Billy Goat, as you put him, let him get in, we'll capture him rather than shoot him?
No prisoners taken either side. No prisoners. Certainly not with the Japs. And what would we do if we captured him? We only got to feed him and look after him, someone to guard him. No prisoners. I don't think it ever entered anyone's head to do that. He was never captured anyway. Oh, no, you'd let him get very, very close, but you knew damn well that just down the track from him, not many yards away, was a lot of Japs, and there's only three or four of you. You wouldn't want to hang around. The main thing is to delay them, find out where they were. But that was, I was never at the head of ours going up. No, there wouldn't be. We were in our own side of the fence.
Well, presumably it was difficult to see apart from anything else.
But you couldn't see either side, you mean,
yeah.
Laterally. Oh, no, well, the jungle's pretty dense. It's like looking at that green curtain, really. It really was. It's very, very dense. I've not much of an experience of jungle, but I saw a lot of it there. But we were...
How much did you see of the enemy when you mentioned this chapel?
Oh, not many. Not many at all. I suppose if I saw 10 dead Japs would be as many as I saw, you couldn't. I mean, you knew they were there, you could hear them. And if you were further up towards Kokoda, half the time the blokes were firing where they heard them, you know, into the jungle and so forth. They did see a lot more there because it really was close in fighting, but the time I caught up on Brigade Hill, it was stop, withdrawal, stop, withdrawal. And we got to a place called Irribarra Ridge, which is getting bloody close to the plains of Moresby. By this time, poor old Potsy had been recalled. You know, blame, you reckon we were all running away.
Yeah.
And we were, no, Potts was still with us, because I've never seen him. Irribarra, we were told, Blamey and all his cohorts had said, you must not withdraw any further. Stay there until you die, literally. So we were dug small slit trenches with our hats, tin hats, and Potts came round. I know he came round where I was, our platoon, to encourage. And he did, you know, just the fact he was, came along and gave us words of encouragement, and, you know, to be, even to be see a brigadier like Potts, we all knew him then by sight, and who he was. And he came round and spoke to us all. I don't know how many were there. There weren't many in our company when we actually came out there, and said there's only 15 in our company, able-bodied blokes. Our company is 140, probably not everyone with us. Anyway, and we dug in and waited for the Japs to come, and fortunately, before the Japs did come, they were just the other side of the bloody river down below. We were told, I think the 16th Brigade were going to relieve us, that's the 6th Divi, 16th Brigade, and we were permitted to withdraw, and that's, we came right out from there.
What was the reputation that the Japanese had as a jungle fighter?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. They were expendable, but, they weren't mugs at all. They were very good fighters.
Presumably you've been told all the same stories about them being myopic and not bandy-legged.
Yes, we knew all that, yeah. Well, I think everyone knew that from by reputation only. We certainly got some lectures about the Middle East before we landed there, about the WOGs, the local conditions, but I don't remember, I'm sure I'm right, ever having a lecture about what to expect or what the Japs were like, but we knew they were tenacious, and we knew they were, this harry-carry business. They were going to God, if they were their God, if they get killed, and therefore they were tenacious. They were good fighters, and small little buggers. I remember seeing couple of dead Japs in Ghana. And God, they looked like blown up frogs. And they're the best bloody Japs I ever saw, the dead bastards. But, they were good fighters. They really were. And I believe the Australian and New Zealand are good fighters. I really do. So it was a pretty good match, really.
They were big blokes, I understand. They weren't these
small. Oh, I don't know. No, they weren't. Well, I can tell you, at Ghana, I hopped into a, when I got wounded, I hopped into a Jap slit trench and came up to here.
And you're a tall bloke.
Yeah, I know, but you said they were tall, but no, they were basically short. I don't know what height that'd be. I've never thought about it, but I know that slit trench only came up to here. That's why I got a little through there.
All right, we'll talk about that a bit later. But their equipment was certainly better suited to jungle fighting.
Oh, they had a mountain gun. A mountain gun which they manhandled all the way up. In fact, I was at the receiving end, nearly the receiving end of one shot from mountain gun, and I was at the receiving end of the second one. I got blown up again. But waiting there. There's four of us. Bill Graydon, who you may have heard, he's a member of Parliament. He and myself and three others behind a big tree waiting for the slit eye to come up the track, and had this mountain gun, which is a very flat trajectory and high explosive. It was really a jungle gun. We didn't have any artillery at all, just our bloody rifles. And we knew they had this mountain gun, but it was well back. We couldn't get it. And they must have, I don't know what they were firing at, but the three blokes in front of, I put the foot of the other, we were just lying there waiting. And Bill Graydon, who is my officer, and these three blokes, and this bloody thing exploded in the tree above us. It killed the three blokes in front because I think they had the rest in their head, I'm assuming they did, against the tree. I remember one bloke had his head split open. So it knocked Bill Graydon out. I thought he was killed, actually, with the other three, and I was the only one left. I was okay. So I grabbed the rifles out of there, these blokes, and chucked them down the side, And I chucked the grenades that Bill Graydon had, and I can't remember, I wonder what he had. He had something, probably a revolver, I don't know. And I thought all four were dead. Well, those three certainly were, because I got their remains splattered over me. I should have checked with Bill. At any rate, I lurched off, back and reported to the battalion, over the hill and back to the battalion, or company at least, and said that these three blokes were dead, and Bill